Hello, and welcome to The Canadian Story, where we discuss what Canada is, what Canada could be, and what Canada should be.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Canadian Story. My name's David Parker. I'm here with my co-host, Zach Gerber, and George Bears. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here today and great to be on your show. Really appreciate it.
Well, I just appreciate all of the work that you've been doing and everything you've been doing behind the scenes that I feel like not everyone knows about. And I feel that more people need to know. Now, to be fair, your organization is a lot bigger than our listenership, so a lot of people do know about it. But for those who don't know, can you tell everyone about this amazing thing you've done called Taking Back Our Freedoms, why you're doing it? Just a short, 4 minutes into that, and then we'll go into like more of the details of the story.
For sure, David. Thank you, David. Taking Back Our Freedoms, if you're looking for the website, it's tbof.ca. It was actually August 23rd last summer when I was watching Ted Kootz at Vaccine Choice Canada, and he had Dr. David E. Martin on that night talking about some very in-depth problems with respect to the vaccine and the whole SARS-CoV-2. And, I'm sure like many of us activists in the past, we were realizing for the last 2 years, there's something terribly wrong here. There's something terribly wrong. My background, I came out of the Canadian criminal justice system from 1986 to 1991, mostly dealing as a national advocate with families of homicide across the country. I spent so much time in Ottawa that I ended up moving to Hull, Quebec, and worked at my office in Slater and O'Connor Street, 5 minutes from the Hill. So having had some background experience dealing with criminal justice issues, there was just, you could just see that there was something wrong here. And I talked to a couple of my friends, Roy Byers, a good buddy of mine, and we said, we need to do something that can really speak to this issue. And when we started doing our initial research, let me tell you, there's some incredible organizations out there, incredible freedom organizations. What we were seeing with the lawyers' organizations, and they're completely necessary, these lawsuits and these cases that are before the courts right now, vital in how the outcome ultimately plays itself out. The problem is, we don't have that kind of time to wait for what could be years to get decisions. We lose our country in the meantime. And a lot of other organizations that were very, very good organizations, organizations like Canadian COVID Care Alliance. I know David Ross out there and great work they do. What we're saying is, what is that part within the freedom movement that we're not seeing on a national scale that needs to be addressed? And it was the issue of just good old-fashioned grassroots lobbying. And, I've been an advocate for many years. We started to pull things together. And quite frankly, for the next 6 weeks, all I did was just basic research. Because one thing I've known in movements in the past is you can't have even an ounce of hyperbole or exaggeration. We wanted to get our facts down. We wanted to get them right. We needed to be credibility, because credibility is everything. And over the next few months, we had the good fortune of bringing together an amazing team. And that team has become actually better known as TBOF, Taking Back Our Freedoms. And we're now national. And we're one of the mainline or national organizations in the freedom movement in Canada.
That's amazing.
So when
there's something I wanted to ask, because I feel like every person who sees what's going on in our country right now and feels some level of concern for what's going on has a thing over the past 2 years that kind of tipped them off. Do you have a defining moment that you can look back on for you where you went, that doesn't seem to add up. That doesn't make any sense.
That's a great question, Zach. I tell you, about 3 weeks into this, actually late April 2020, my wife Julie and I were saying there's something wrong here. Okay, so you want to social distance us for a couple of weeks? Like, what's that all about? And we just didn't feel right about this from the beginning. In fact, we almost started to speak out on those issues then, because they're closing down businesses in this province. I live in Alberta, and you know, closing down golf courses, closing down restaurants, closing down everything. So that was where it was very disturbing. And looking back, probably should have taken a stronger stand there. But the real kicker was last summer, and starting to see, you know, the summer of 2021, starting to see that there was a whole series of this narrative that was not lining up. Plus the fact, probably the greatest motivator is I got married late in life. I'm 65 now. I was 40 years old when I got married, and I have a 21-year-old son and a 19-year-old son and soon to be a 17-year-old daughter who were all very likely heading toward getting vaxxed last fall. So the first real call to action was, wow, I need to educate myself to understand how I can speak to my kids. And no matter how great an answers I had, it seemed like, you know, a prophet's without honor in his hometown. It was like I wasn't necessarily having the credibility with the ones I loved the most. And it was over the next few months that we had the good fortune of bringing in, quite frankly, I'm just very humbled by this, but an incredible board of directors and an incredible board of advisors. And for that, we're very thankful. So really, mid-August last year was where, okay, now it's take no prisoners. We've got to step in. We've got to mobilize the country.
Right.
On that note, Zach, why don't you share with listeners what your moment was, and then I'll share what mine was, because I think people like to know that. And
Yeah. So for me, it would have been, I can't remember the exact month, but it would have been summer of 2020 when Roman Baber was fired from the Conservative caucus here in Ontario for writing an open letter to Mr. Ford saying, hey, here are the numbers that we have right now. And the numbers, I'd have to go back and look at them, but the numbers that were represented were a very, very, very different story than what we were hearing on the news. And I've been skeptical of the news for a very long time, so that's nothing new for me, but it was a stark reality check that what was being reported to me was not necessarily what was going on. And that gave me a huge amount of caution around the whole situation. So David?
I mean, for me, I've said this at a lot of meetings for Take Back Alberta, but maybe not on the podcast. But maybe I have, but it was absolutely and unequivocally when Jason Kenney began arresting pastors for holding services during the lockdown and basically elevating health safety above religious freedom, which to me violated the basic premise of Western civilization as far as I understand it. So that for me was the end. But and I've been working hard to get rid of Jason Kenney as premier ever since, as you know, Zach.
Mm-hmm.
But that for me was the was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. I was always pretty upset about the lockdowns, but that was the end for me.
Yeah. So George, your organization, old fashioned grassroots lobbying. What are your directives? What are you going for?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. It's evolved. And by the way, on David's comment there on Jason Kenney, I share that. You know, it's the greatest regret I ever had ever voting for Jason Kenney for premier. And this is the same premier of Alberta, I might add, a couple of years before that was scorning the Chinese Communist Party for their lack of religious freedoms. And he's even gone further in some cases than most countries' tyrannies in the world. So,
right. I want to interject there because I have a different question, and I think this is important. And I'm sorry for bouncing all around here.
No.
That's a very interesting thing to say about Mr. Kenney. You know, he was a couple years ago criticizing the Chinese government and has turned into that thing himself in a very short amount of time. And this is just, you know, pure speculation, but I'm going to ask you to speculate because I've observed those sorts of changes in a lot of people very quickly. What is it that you think is happening to us that is allowing for those things to happen? Why is this happening?
You know, that's a very deep question, and I can only offer an opinion. First of all, I don't know what goes on inside of Jason Kenney's mind, but whatever it is, he's in a very dark place. I wasn't close friends with Jason, but I've known him for over 20 years. I've been in his home 20 years ago. And the Jason Kenney that I used to know 20 years ago is not the Premier Kenney in this province. In fact, he needs to go. And I just want to commend David and his efforts with TBA and what they're doing. And in the part that we're role playing, we're just honored to do that. Here's what it appears to be. There's such a big tech, big pharma, mainstream media, and, you know, Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. I'm not a conspiracy theorist when we talk about the agenda of the World Economic Forum and the globalists. And it's very clear what they're looking to do. You know, as evidenced not only by the supposed vaccine, we call it the jab, but something even more ominous than that people need to be aware of. And, you know, Dr. Naomi Wolf, I don't know her personally, but I've often seen her on Bannon in the US, and she's a liberal. I'm a conservative. But I tell you, this crosses all political boundaries. I have great respect for what she's been doing the last year and a half. And she's speaking about the vaccine passport, the actual passport issue. And if we were ever to let that happen, you know, our freedoms are gone. So we're right at that defining moment. And I have to believe and I have to hope that, you know, we're going to see a continuing, and we are seeing a continued awakening within the Canadian public, within the Alberta public. And it's really good to see. I think there's a real play, a global play here. And who's going to win? The globalists or those who support nationalism? And clearly, I love Canada. This is a great place to live. And, you know, if we're not going to take a stand, I'd say to anyone who's still sitting on the fence, and I say this respectfully, because I was a year and a half getting into the real fight too. So I don't say it with any disrespect, but if we're going to walk by, you know, the grave sites of our forefathers that have gone and they've died in foreign soil or they've died in foreign wars, and then not do anything now, then I don't know how we can look ourselves in the mirror. We need to step up.
Mm. Yeah.
So George, I got a question on that for you. I agree wholeheartedly. Why do you think that so many people didn't wake up to what was going on? I consider myself a late bloomer on this as well. Even on the vaccine, Zach was telling me that it was a problem for a long time. The only reason I wasn't getting it for the longest time was because I hate being told what to do. I'm just a stubborn guy and I don't like being told what to do, right? So, but as time has developed and I've met with so many people who, and at the end of the day, whether or not the vaccine was hurting people or not was irrelevant to me because I didn't believe the government should have the right to take away my freedoms regardless, right? And I know you feel the same way. Why do you think they want to take our freedoms away? Like, do you think they're doing it because they think it's in our best interest? I've heard that, right? But there's also this agenda, right? People say, oh, when you say globalist, you're an anti-Semite, right? That's the new one, right? Where it's like I'm sure you're one of the biggest fans of Israel in the world. I am too, right? But that doesn't matter in the sense of what I'm saying is when you say the nationalists versus the globalists, there's certain ways that people think of it, right?
Right.
Let's dig into our definitions so that people can understand what we're talking about, what kind of war is going on. And I'll share what I think it is very briefly. I think the war is between the pro-humans and the anti-humans. Yeah. It's between people who don't like humanity and people who love humanity. People who want us to not have children anymore, who want us to die off to preserve a pristine natural planet. And the people who believe that humanity, that the earth is for humanity, not humanity for earth, right? That's the war that I see happening, but I'd like your perspective on that.
The nation was founded on principles of religious freedom. We're a Judeo-Christian founding nation, both Jews and Christians, really. And of course, there's all the watershed of all of the different religions on the planet. And I have great respect for them all. I may share different views, but at the end of the day, we were founded as a Judeo-Christian nation. And you only have to look to two dichotomies in history to prove this. Those countries that have held to those kinds of principles with which we were founded on, imperfect though we are, the U.S. founded on the same principles versus any socialist regime in the history of mankind. You had two different outcomes. In the Judeo-Christian founding, you had the freedoms and the liberties that the whole world admired and came to, were drawn to. Socialism has always led to tyranny, has led to the total taking away of our freedoms. These freedoms that we enjoy, freedom without responsibility, is truly anarchy. And back to yourself, David, you know, with TBA a few weeks ago at a rally in Calgary, and it so resonated with me. You said, you know what the problem is? You know what? This was David speaking that day. Compelling speech you made. But the thing that caught me the most was when you looked right at the audience that day, a few thousand people, and you said, why is this? Who do we blame? And then he had just one two-letter word, us. And man, that just pierced my heart that day. But it also gave me a tremendous encouragement. And I'll tell you why. When we started TBOF, it was about the mandates. You asked earlier, what were the founding principles? But now that we're evolving into, you might say, the next phase of taking back our freedoms. We initially thought this would be a 7-month in and out project. We go back to what we do. I'm a private business owner. I love being an entrepreneur. I'm a serial entrepreneur. But when we got, by the time Christmas came around, Dr. Paul Alexander on our board and our dear Premier Brian Peckford, who's our chairman, and many others said, I think there's a legacy process we need to consider for TBOF. So it evolved over the last few months that we'll probably, I wish we wouldn't have to be around at all, but I could see us around for the next 40 years. Why? Probably longer. Because we didn't get here overnight. 2 years of what the wake-up call was, and in many ways, I'm hoping we're going to look back at this time in history and say it actually brought us an awakening. That's what we truly live for every day. And when we do, TBOF is moving much more into getting into the real depth of the problem. Like we're looking at possibilities around not a public inquiry. When I used to be in justice system, I helped to spearhead some public inquiries, but we're looking to do some citizens inquiry, privately funded, privately done, holding these guys accountable. And that's what we will do. So that goes to that philosophy, but, it's going to take the waking up of many more Canadians, and we're very encouraged to see that happening each and every day.
Ah, thank you for what you're doing, George, because it's been incredible to watch it. I mean, you've put together such an amazing team, and I have a younger, less experienced version of you of putting together teams, but to see the people that you brought in on that team is quite incredible. Peckford, a lot of the people who listen to this podcast love the people that are literally on the board of directors of the company the movement that you created. So thank you for that. I think that needs to be recognized. How did you do it? How did you reach out to all of these people and get them on your board? How did you build a movement of, at one point, with a reach of 200,000 individual people through email, Zoom, every way that you were reaching them?
It grew very rapidly. How do we do it? You know, I've said a while ago, we're good at what we do. I think maybe I was only born with 3 degrees of separation. I'm sort of accused of that all the time. I can't explain it. You know what? We're good at what we do, but we're not this good. It's my faith in the good Lord and how he's led us through all of this. And when I think of people like Lieutenant Colonel David Redmond, who joined we actually had a 4-hour conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Redmond on November 11th of all days. And here's a man who led his troops out of Bosnia in 1995. And when 9/11 happened, then Premier Klein, who I just have so much respect for, one of the greatest premiers in Alberta's history, appointed Lieutenant Colonel Redmond as the chief of the counterterrorism in 2001 after 9/11. And he went on to do consulting in both Canada and the United States in those issues. But, you know, he wrote the Emergency Act. And on November 11th, when we talked about what we wanted to do, in answer to your question, we've just been very blessed that people like Lieutenant Colonel David Redman and Premier Brian Peckford, I'm going to miss some people, and I apologize. I'll just name a couple more. You know, Dr. Eric Payne. Who is Dr. Eric Payne? You know, he's a Harvard graduate and then trained for 7 years at the Mayo Clinic on pediatrics. And Alberta was fortunate enough to hire him at the Alberta Children's Hospital. And he was let go in the middle of December of this past year because of this very issue. You have Dr. Patrick Phillips out in Northern Ontario. He was fired. Why was he fired? Because their policy says that they have to report adverse reactions. So Dr. Phillips was doing his job. And if you're watching Patrick Phillips, Dr. Patrick Phillips, we have so much respect for you, and we're so honored that you're on our board. He was fired for following through on what his policy said he's supposed to do with respect to adverse reactions. Like, go figure that one.
That is incredible.
Incredible. So, you know, I guess when our team started seeing the configuration, I think Paul, maybe in answer to your question, maybe Dr. Paul Alexander, who worked with the Trump administration, put it best. He's from Southern Ontario. Very dear friend, Dr. Paul Alexander. In fact, Fauci used to report to him in the West Wing. There's a whole story behind that. But Dr. Paul Alexander said it best, I think. He said, you know, what's unique about TBOF is you've got, on the one hand, people like Corporal Danny Bulford, who was a sharpshooter protecting the prime minister, a couple of prime ministers, actually. You got Vincent Gerses with Police for Freedom, who's now on our board of advisors as well. You got Brian Dennison, a 23-year police officer in Calgary here. We've got from David Redmond to Premier Peckford to doctors to police, we've got a diverse group that gives us an enormous privilege of reaching in to a number of different areas with subject matter expertise. And so to be surrounded by such great people, and that's not even to mention, you know, Dr. Laura Braden out in Prince Edward Island, and just the untold numbers of hundreds and hundreds of volunteers across the country, like Dr. Lana Nickel and Melissa Bedeen and others that are just incredible leaders. And now I might add, you know, working with TBA and working with Vaccine Choice Canada and We Unify, we're now really starting to connect with many other organizations across the country in a team effort. Sure, we have our mandate, and that's an important mandate, but so are the mandates of the other organizations. And while we can still maintain our autonomy, it's so important that we approach this battle as a unified team. And that's really the vision going forward.
Yeah, so I want to actually use that as a segue. I guess it's not quite a segue because we're going back, but I skirted over a question I had asked you that we didn't quite get to. When you hang up this call and you go back to work, what is the directive that you are hitting? What is your organization doing today in Canada?
Very, very good question. We're looking at a couple of key areas. And the fundamental area we're looking speaks to something that's very near to David Parker's heart. And you express it as well as anybody I've met. And that is this. A few weeks ago on a phone call with Premier Brian Peckford, we were talking about Canada being the worst in the parliamentary democracies around the world and other democracies. We place last with respect. This is a terrible thing. With respect to, because of citizen apathy, at any given time, we're plus or minus 1% of citizens engaged. And I'll say, much of that time, myself included, citizens engaged at the municipal level, police commission level, school board level, provincial, federal, all levels. So one of the fundamental things that I it keeps me up at night is how do we take that 1% and move it to 3%, maybe over 5 years, move it to 5%. How do we go from worst to best? And, you know, Premier Peckford put it best when I was talking about that very issue with I said, you know, maybe we could get to 3% by the time the next federal election rolls around. And he, and as he put it, and he knows so well, he said, we get to 3%, we govern again. Who's we? We, the citizens of this country. We govern. And if we could be so audacious to believe, and I believe we can, I believe we can get to 4 and 5% to be the shining country in the world of citizen participation, voluntary participation in our process, number one. Number two and number three. Number two is we are looking at developing. We haven't got the pieces all figured out yet, but we're looking at developing and are developing a citizens inquiry. Private citizens inquiry, so that we hold these politicians and health czars accountable, in many cases criminally accountable. And number three, right within our Charter of Rights and Freedoms and our Constitution, as so well spoken by Premier Peckford, is the right for freedom to travel. And we really are looking at ways and means that we can put a professional lobby both on the airlines and on the Department of Transport. If anybody from the Department of Transport is listening now, you better batten down your hatches, because the citizens of Canada are going to be coming, and they're going to be demanding what the rest of the world has practically already done, and that's give their citizens the right to fly anywhere these airlines fly. And that's an area that we are really beginning to put a strategy around, and we're really excited about that.
That last one, it gets me. It is flabbergasting and unscientific that those mandates would continue to be in place. And I can think that it is for no reason other than to punish the people who wouldn't go along to get along. I can
see
no other reason.
I'll say this on your national podcast. It's personal with me. My father-in-law was, former CFL Hall of Famer, Don Southern. He was 11 years player and 22 years CFL coach, many of those years with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. He passed away on January 11th, 2 months ago. And to this day, we have not been able to have a memorial service for him because we're unvaxxed, and we're proudly unvaxxed. And we can't get across that border. And there's no reason we shouldn't be able to book a ticket with WestJet and fly there next week, but we can't. And some very close friends of mine, we're doing some strategizing and looking at what we can do to be able to speak to this issue and really begin. Think about it, anybody that's listening, whether you're vaxxed or unvaxxed, whether you're on this side of the issue or on this side of the issue, every one of these people that would watch this podcast, I'd ask yourself this question. And maybe you're on either side of the issue, but within your family, your family's, and I'm saying to the audience, your family's no different than any of the rest of us. There's members of your family that you can't see because either they're in a different country and they're not vaxxed and you are, or vice versa, or different parts of the country. That's not even constitutional. And if we wait for the courts to decide, we'll lose our country. So we need to be the aggressors. And we believe this is a call to action that we believe a great number of Canadians, young and old, are going to answer that call. And that's been very encouraging. And by the way, when I say we, let me be very clear. TBOF and a few other organizations may be putting this initiative together. But to be clear, we're going to be working with all of the freedom groups across the country because we're just one among many. And if there's anything I've learned from my volunteers over the last few months is the importance of really having close alignment on different issues. And this is one that we're going to call upon all of the freedom organizations to help us with. And we don't need to own the brand of that. The only people that need to own the brand of that are the citizens themselves. That's what we do.
Well, hey, I'm sure you got a couple allies here. I don't want to speak for David too strongly, but I would speculate that he would also be on board with that. It's I feel like I have to say it again. It is just mind-boggling that this has dragged on so long. And
I know.
And to a certain at a certain point, you're right. I mean, I haven't had the experience that you have had, and my condolences to you. I feel so deeply for you. But the longer it goes on, for so many people, I think it does become personal because it begins to feel like a personal slight out of spite. And I think that's, and I think if we're calling a spade, that's what we're experiencing here. It is a spiteful position because we wouldn't get in line. And that's not okay. Not in my country.
No, not in my country. Exactly. Yes. George, we have about 15, 20 minutes left here before you have to go and we have to go. So there's one thing that I know both Zach and I would love to hear about, and that's your time in Ottawa with the truckers, being around that boardroom table, helping them navigate the bureaucracies of the world and the legal and the role you're playing in this new documentary. There's just so much to say. We don't have much time, but I just want just share not so much every detail, but more what the experience meant to you, what it felt like, and where you see that kind of catalyst developing in this country.
You know, Ottawa, just the day before we got to Ottawa, Dr. Paul Alexander, Dr. Julie Panes, both on our board, Brian Dennison on our board, Roy Beyer, myself, and my two sons spoke at the Rainbow Bridge, Niagara Falls, New York. And that in itself was a very moving moment, because here we are, and I'll lead that right to Ottawa. Here we were halfway across the Rainbow Bridge at Niagara Falls, and here were our American counterparts cheering Canada, and we were cheering the U.S. And even the customs officers, one lady there by the name of Sylvia, U.S. customs officer, we wanted to exchange hats with the U.S. truckers, and she wouldn't let me go beyond the pylon. And when I went up to introduce Dr. Alexander to speak, I just gave a shout out to the U.S. and Canada border guards and customs officers. And those guys were standing there with their arms all folded. And when I gave that shout out, because I said they're only doing their jobs, you saw grown men, 6'5" and more, wiping tears from their eyes because they were really feeling it. And when I went back to that gal to let Dr. Paul Alexander speak, she beckoned me over and she said, by the way, when you were speaking, I was calling Windsor and I was calling Detroit, see if we could get permission to let you do the caps. And they said no. And I said to them, I can't hear you. I'm glad you approved it. And she hung up. She said, Mr. Bears, could you step over the pylon, please? And she had one of the people on the other side, one of the truckers. And we walked out to the middle with 25, 30 caps and exchanged them. That was a very moving moment where you saw two countries coming together, standing with one another from all walks of life, then drove up to Ottawa. Ottawa was a whole experience that my boys and I and the team that we were with, we've never experienced anything like this in our lives. And if there's anything, David and Zach, that Ottawa really taught us, the truckers, I just give a huge salute to the truckers, not only in Ottawa, but the truckers all over this land. Think about it. For the past 2 years, these were the guys who the Prime Minister revered as essential services until he didn't want them to be essential service anymore, because he, like Fidel Castro, maybe even a relation of his, I'm not sure. He, like Fidel Castro.
George, be good, be good.
I don't know. Just there's a family resemblance. But in any event,
it's a little uncanny, isn't it? It's just a slight bit uncanny.
Okay, until he finally decided that they were no longer essential. And that was so degrading. I guess I'll leave you with three things about Ottawa that was staggering. Dr. Eric Payne was with me out there. His folks live in Ottawa, right downtown Ottawa, just out of the downtown. They watch CBC, Global, CTV. They thought their son was in a danger zone because of the propaganda, the Joseph Goebbels propaganda of the mainstream media. It's outrageous. And Ottawa, silent. Conservatives and liberals alike, all silent. And then we saw the truckers. And then we saw the Canadian flags. And then we saw, and by the way, it was no danger zone at all. I don't know how many times I've heard this preached by the truckers out there and everybody else. Peaceful protest. My goodness, they were cleaning up their yard outside of their trucks all up and down Ottawa. It was the most wonderful experience I ever experienced in my life. I guess the one thing that I took from that was a whole new pride in Canada, because we were watching on social media and finding, I was getting text messages from Australia, New Zealand, Belgium, that they were starting trucking convoys. And we were hidden away in the back room, TBOF and a couple of organizations, working with these guys, because the beauty of the truckers, they're all independent. The tough thing about it was they're all independent, but their independence and yet their cooperation and their love for God and country and citizens, that trumped everything. And we worked together in that fifth floor of the Ark Hotel and some other places. And there was a coming together of a Team Canada. And this wasn't only TBOF. We were an instrumental player for sure, but there was all of these different organizations, a list too long to even mention. But I want to give a shout out to all of the freedom organizations in the country. Not only us, we were a part of a large team of organizations, plural. And leaving Ottawa, I guess the lesson that it really taught us and the inspiration that it was, is as a team, whatever organizations you're with, maybe you're with no organization, but the coming together of Canadians under a cause for freedom, that's a movement that cannot and will not be stopped. And we are not going to hold the line. Like General Patton said, we need to advance and advance and advance. And I'll tell you, 5 years from now, TBOF, if we and the freedom movement, if the freedom movement in this country, God bless us if we reach 5% citizen participation, I still won't be satisfied. Let's get to 10%. Let's drive this freedom movement. And let it be said that 2020 to 2022 was a wake-up call. But just like some of those senior Japs said after Pearl Harbor, my goodness, I believe we awakened the sleeping giant. And let it be known to any parliamentarians from any party in Ottawa, if you're watching this podcast, I'll just give this comment. Like Winston Churchill said, so will we say, we will never, never, never give up. They'll have to kill us all before we'll give up. And that's what I'm seeing Canada is made of. That's the Canada I love. That's the Canada I invite anyone who's living in fear. Step out of that comfort zone and stand for what this Canadian flag and this Canadian country stands for, because I love Canada.
Yeah, that's, I'll tell you what, I so believe in what you're saying and what you just said. I sometimes feel ashamed of myself for feeling this way, but I was beginning to lose faith in our country until those truckers came along. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel at home in my own country. I didn't recognize my country. And then the truckers happened and I went, there, I'm from that country.
That's my country. That's my country. Yes. And
it's one of the most profound feelings I've felt in my lifetime to be reminded that the people I come from will stand for something like that. And I feel blessed to have been here to watch it happen and to now play my small role in continuing the movement.
And can I make another comment? That's great to hear, Zach and David. You know, if there was one single memorable moment, I'll never forget it. I had the privilege of speaking on the main stage on Parliament Hill on Sunday, January 30th and Monday, January 31st. Because of my background in the justice system and working with families whose loved ones have been murdered, I became friends with quite a number of folks across the country whose loved ones have died as a result of the jab. One such friend was a gentleman, and his name is it was a tough day. On Monday, January 31st, should have been Sean Hartman's 18th birthday. Sean Hartman's dad, just before I took the stage, I phoned Dan Hartman, Barrie, Ontario. Dan's a single dad. Very proud of his son, just like I'm proud of my sons. And Sean was a very good emerging hockey player, possibly even heading to the pros at one point, 17 years old. And on August 25th, 2021, Sean Hartman, because he wanted to play in Tier 1 hockey that fall, unbeknownst to his dad, took the jab. And come Labor Day 2021, wasn't feeling so good. And Dan Hartman's only son, Sean, on the 27th day of September, died. And he died as a result of heart issues associated with the spike protein. Now, have we proven that yet? No, we haven't. But we've had some medical records through some doctors on our board that have reviewed these, and we're now there's now a criminal investigation happening regarding his death. And I won't name the particular detective that I'm working with, but I have great respect for her. And just before I took to the stage on Monday, January 18th, I phoned Dan. And I said, I'm going to go up and speak with Dr. Alexander and Dr. Hodgkinson in a moment, and Dr. Byron Bridle, three great friends. I said, do you mind if we have a moment for Sean today? It's his birthday. And Dan was weeping on the phone. I was as well. And he said, please do, George. And of course, Dan, what do you suppose Dan does? Dan drives a big rig. But he works for another company, and he wasn't able to come to Ottawa. But nonetheless, a trucking hero, delivering essential services all over Ontario. So when I took to the stage, the only thing I could see was my friend Dan. And I asked all of the folks in Parliament Hill and all the truckers, I said, can we have a moment of silence right now? Because I want to call out the number one trucker on our hearts today, and I want to honor a trucker across Canada. His name is Dan Hartman. He drives a big rig down in Barrie. He couldn't be here today. But the reason I want to honor him is today should have been his son Sean's 18th birthday. And when we have 1 minute of silence from the truckers and all of the audience, there might have been 30, 40,000 people there. After that minute is done, I'll take my hat off. I'll put my hat back on. I had it off then. But when I put my hat back on, can we hear those church bells, those truckers laying on those horns? And can we hear the audience? Well, for the deafening silence it was for that moment could only be compared with the surreal, deafening noise afterwards. And I tell you, every single one of those truckers, even the ones that were outside of the city, simultaneous were blowing their horns for the next probably 5 minutes. They couldn't even do any more announcements on the stage till they were done. That's when it brings it from the statistical level that the politicians would love to the personal level. And I'll only say this in closing. To the politicians who sit in their cozy offices and collect their big checks and who knows what else as a result of why they're not telling the truth on all of this, maybe we'll get to the truth someday, and I tell you, we're not going to give up until we do. But to those politicians, Sean Hartman may only be a statistic. And so may, and she's given me permission to say this as well, my dear friend Cheryl Moberly in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan. She wants the whole world to know her name. Why? Because she's a narcissist? No. Because she's a courageous mother at 65, who on the 12th of October last fall, her single mom daughter, 39-year-old Jolene, took the jab so she could provide for her four children. She took the jab on October 12th, and Jolene died on October 17th. God. And when she died, Cheryl was in her outside of her room in ICU. She had to fight for 2 hours to get into the hospital that day. And she got into the hospital, and she looked in her room, and there was Jolene with towels wrapped around her wrists, holding her wrists down and a mask on. And she said to the doctor, why is my daughter's wrists tied? And he basically said, I don't have to talk to you. You're not vaxxed. You don't have a mask on. She pushed him out of the way, came into the room. He was going to call the police. She encouraged him to do so. And she went in and she heard her daughter calling her mommy. And she went over and gently took her mask off. And she's all sweating under her mask with all kinds of dots on her face that is believed to be spike protein. And gently untied her wrists. And less than 2.5 hours later, her daughter died. That's not a statistic. What I'll say with those and the hundreds of others is this. Everyone here has someone who loves them. And if there's no other reason for citizens to move from being passive to engaging in the peaceful demonstration and the peaceful discourse and getting involved in this movement with whatever organization you want to get involved with. There's a lot of great organizations. Please get involved. We can't have this happen. These are crimes against humanity, and these are not statistics. These are real stories. And by God, we are going to get to the bottom of what the criminal events were leading up to these deaths. And for that reason, it's the thing that continues to keep me engaged, smiling, and going forward with great hope, because every day we're meeting people just like yourselves. It's been a great privilege meeting you, David, and your team.
Oh.
And we're meeting some young people, and you're going to see some real emerging leadership continue to emerge into the movement. And, you know, that's really important, too. We need that 16 to 25-year-old citizen in this country to hear a podcast like this, or it doesn't have to be me. It could be anybody. The work you're doing is invaluable at the Canadian Story, let me tell you. But we need to be engaging that 16 to 25-year-old demographic. And I'm always looking for young leadership. And one of these days, we're going to see, you know, more and more of that coming into TBOF. And for that, I'm just so excited and so thankful, because we got a great future ahead. I'll simply say this. 2020 to 2022 may have been the darkest hour of this country. But I tell you, I believe this with every ounce of being in me. I believe it's been our greatest hour, because I believe there's awakening now that we can't even stop the momentum that's going to continue to happen, as evidenced by the guys I'm meeting every day, including yourselves. So I just want to commend you guys. And I just thank God for the Canadian Story and the work that you're doing, because you're getting the message out there.
Well, my goodness. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the compliment, and thank you for all the obvious hard work and dedication that you were bringing to our country. I commend you on that, and I look forward to working with you in the future on it, because we live in a beautiful, wonderful, blessed country, and we're going to keep it that way.
Thank you so
exactly.
much. And thank you so much, David. It's just been a privilege.
Yeah, George, thank you for everything you're doing. And I guess my message is thank you for fighting powerful people.
Thank you, man. It's just been great. It's been great. And David and Zach, I know you see it every day. If I may, what's been the most inspiring thing? I'm not talking TBOF now. I'm just talking about this movement. What's been the most inspiring thing that you guys have seen in the last 2 years? And that's I'd love to know.
I don't want to point to one specific thing. What I would like to mention is, I think the most inspiring thing for me is watching people who had no idea that something was a foul all of a sudden go, oh, because that's been happening a lot. It's been happening more and more. And that's encouraging to me, because those are my fellow Canadians and we need them on board.
We sure do.
Mine would definitely be Lacrete, the McKenzie County up in northern Alberta. When AHS came to shut down one of their restaurants, about 150 of them showed up at that restaurant, and they took AHS and they said, "You're not welcome in our town anymore." And they drove them out of town and said, "Don't come back." And I think that if more of us did that, and here's my message for those powerful politicians, is we are coming for you.
Yes.
And we will not rest. We will not rest. Absolutely. Until you are held accountable for the lives that you've ruined. We won't. You will have to kill us, because otherwise we will get you.
We absolutely will. Thank you so much, guys. This has been just a great inspiration. I just see continued things happening like this. And yeah, one thing I will do our best to help spread the Canadian story from Bonavista, Vista, Newfoundland to Tofino, British Columbia, because it needs to be heard. It needs to be heard. And yeah, I'm a big fan.
Well, thank you, George, so much. We're honored to have you on the show, and we are honored to be partners with you. And yeah, just thanks for being here, and thanks everyone for listening. We will see you next
time. Thanks, everybody.
Have a great night, guys. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Canadian Story. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at The CAD Story. That's The CAD Story. If you enjoy this podcast, please share it with your friends and family. Let's work together to remind Canadians how great our country is.